Welcome to a special live broadcast of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest for the next hour, longtime 7th District Congressman Dave Obey, taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for the next hour, you've got a chance to ask Mr. Obey about his priorities for the final few months of his 41-year career in Congress, also his proudest accomplishments during that long career, and the big items making headlines today. The BP oil spill. Who's to blame? Is the Obama administration doing enough? And what does it mean for future energy policy as support falls for offshore drilling and Republicans push for drilling in the Arctic wildlife area? The economy and unemployment. The stock market drops more than 1,000 points in 1 month. Just today, 100 points. And economist Robert Reich says we may be heading for a double-dip recession. Republicans say Mr. Obey's stimulus bill was a failure. Others say it helped, but we need to go further. Then there are the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, tensions between North and South Korea, politics in Wisconsin and Washington, and a partisan divide that seems to get bigger every day. Well, this is your show. We don't get a chance very often to talk to Mr. Obey live on the air for a full hour, and there are lines open right now for your phone calls at 261-6371 if you are in the Wausau area, or anywhere you're listening at 1-800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. Dave, thanks for making yourself available today.
Thanks for having me.
And you have already answered this question a few weeks ago, but I'm going to ask it again anyway. Why are you retiring, and are you sure it's because you weren't afraid that you couldn't be reelected in the current anti-Washington political climate?
Well, let me simply say this. When I was elected the first time, I thought I was a one-term wonder. I thought I'd never get reelected. And I've now gone through 25 elections. I think I've shown I know how to win elections. So that concern, I think, is fairly silly. It's very simple. I've been in public office 48 years, and I've helped put together, over the last 25 years, 25 federal budgets. And I have to tell you, that gets stale after a while. And I really do think that 48 years is quite enough. I've served longer than anybody in Wisconsin history by a long yard. And I've always told people, I told people at the time of reapportionment 10 years ago, that I never wanted to have to go through another one because it takes a huge amount of money and time. And I also told people that I was waiting around to do just one thing, pass health care. And I used to kid the Republicans and say, hey, if you want a shot at my seat, pass health care and I'll give it to you. Well, now I'm doing what I said I did.
A lot of people thought you were being facetious. That comment seemed for a long time like you were saying when hell freezes over.
Well, they may have thought that, but I wanted to quit in the year 2000 when George Bush Jr. was elected, and I thought I was going to quit. And then after 9/11, that changed everything, and so I stuck around for a while. This is a huge district to cover. It's a huge physical effort to go back and forth between Washington every other weekend. And frankly, two of my good friends, Jack Murtha and Charlie Wilson, both died within days of each other. They were both 76. I'm 71. And you begin to think in terms of, is this all there is? And frankly, my frustration in dealing with Senate rules and watching those Senate rules block almost every constructive initiative taken by the House, I just frankly finally had had enough.
Any chance of us changing those rules? It takes 60 to break a filibuster, but to change the rules themselves, it takes 66 votes.
Well, at the beginning of each Congress, the Senate does have the authority to declare itself a new rather than a continuing body.
Which means they could make things up from scratch.
That's right, which means they can set their rules anew every 2 years, just like the House does. And they only need 51 votes to do that. So I would hope that they would do that come the next session. But on my, let me go back to the retirement business a minute. I was in Trigo several weeks ago dedicating a visitor center for Gaylord Nelson on the Namekagon River. And I told the crowd there that I was so amazed at some of the very positive comments about me that had come from my former political opponents once they saw that I was retiring, that I thought I might have to reconsider, and I would hire Brett Favre as my retirement counselor. But I thought better of it and decided I better stick with my decision.
Dave Obey, we've got him for the full hour, 1-800-780-9742. The lines are full, but we're going to take a call right now. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, you're on Route 51. Hello, Dave.
Good afternoon, Dave. My name is Dave also here in Wisconsin Rapids. My
great wife, first name.
The same first name. It means, David, of course, means beloved. My wife Marlis and I circulated nomination papers for you way, way back when you were first in your early runs for Congress, and we were proud to do so. We've had the opportunity to meet at a couple of public meetings that you've held over the years, and I just wanted to say how much we appreciate your service to the 7th District and to the United States. We've always been proud to have called you our congressman. One other thing, there are a few pundits talking about the Republicans taking Congress back and taking back the Senate, but I just have a feeling that they're whistling in the cemetery, or whistling past the cemetery, and that when their actions have been exposed for what they are, I think the Democrats are going to do just fine. And I just wanted to thank you for your service.
Dave, thanks so much for the phone call.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say that. I appreciate your help in the past. I've run into literally hundreds of people all over the district since I made the announcement who've been very kind in their comments, and I do appreciate it.
Let's go to Ron in Rudolph. Ron, you're on with Congressman Dave Obey on this special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hello, Ron.
Yeah, it's a sad day.
And why is it a sad day?
When Congressman Obey left us.
He's still here.
I haven't left here yet. I haven't died yet, and I'm not going away. So you'll see me around. I'm just going to turn the job over to whoever the district people elect in November, and I hope it's Dooley Lassa.
Ron, do you have a question?
I was at an auction 2 weeks ago in Ironwood, Michigan, and of course there were some Tea Party people there, and a guy stood up and to the Tea Party people, and they had said something derogatory about our congressman, and he goes, "You people don't realize what we've got until he's gone. Until he's left the house, you know, with what he's done for us."
Well, I appreciate that much.
Ron, do you have a question or a specific comment?
No, just wanted to thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, too.
And let's go to Ed in Wausau. Ed, you're on live with Congressman Dave Obey.
Hi, Representative Obey. I met you one time. I saw you at a bookstore, and I bought a book. I had flown with Truman back from Brooke Army Hospital. But anyway, just a comment about when you brought a number of physicians up from the NIH to Wausau Hospital and also Marshfield a number of years ago, and plus you and your cohorts, they used to talk to you from the other aisle, funded, health care. And I and my daughter were kind of a recipient of probably some of those funds that you were able to get through Congress. My daughter, back in, I think it was about 1988, contract blastomycosis. Hmm. And I guess now we're having a little kind of an epidemic in Wausau, and five people from the CDC have come up to Wausau to help us work on that. But I'd just like to thank you for the nursing school and everything that you've done for us as far as healthcare.
Well, thank you. I mean, medical research is crucial, and I'm proud of the fact that in the years I served on the Appropriations Committee, we increased funding for the National Institutes of Health by more than 2.5 times. We've made significant progress on things ranging from heart disease to childhood leukemia to you name it. And with the mapping of the human genome, we are on the threshold of amazing changes in medical research and in medical delivery. And I think you'll see some astounding things happen in medicine over the next 10 years. We're the leader in the world, and it's very important that we continue that because it impacts so many people.
Ed, thanks so much for the phone call. Dave, was passing the national health care reform legislation the proudest achievement of your career?
Well, it's what I have wanted for the longest. I mean, when I went to Congress, I was thinking in terms of trying to do something make the distribution of income in this country more fair than it is because you have so much going to the pockets of the top 10%. I also wanted to see a much enhanced federal support for education, and I certainly wanted to see us join the ranks of civilized nations that provide health care opportunities for every citizen. And I was proud to be in the chair of the House when we finally passed the bill. And it's going to mean a very different life for at least 30 million Americans. And you bet I'm proud of that. And when people say this is government takeover of Medicare or of health care, that's a joke. I mean, we specifically rejected doing a government-run model and instead chose to build on the private insurance model with some built-in protections for consumers and patients. And that was a major compromise on our part. And without it, we would still be debating the issue, and we would not have made any progress.
The newest polls indicate that support for health care reform for the bill that passed is still split about 50% on either side. However, more people now say we should not repeal it, but we should give it a chance to work and then make decisions about what to do. Do you see that as a victory?
Absolutely. And let me tell you a story. Between 1930 and 1938, this district was represented by Jerry Boileau. He was the last of the La Follette progressives. And after he got beat in 1938, he came back home and became a judge. And I ran into him. My dad ran a supper club, and Jerry came in to the club one day and had a couple drinks. And I finally asked him, I said, Jerry, what beat you in 1938? He said, Social Security. I said, what do you mean? He said, the seniors voted against me because I voted for Social Security. I said, that can't possibly be. I cannot imagine seniors being opposed to Social Security. He said, look, in those days, there was an alternative called the Townsend Plan. And it was simply, it was promoted by Doc Townsend from California. It was a $100 a month welfare grant to every senior. And he said, FDR understood that would never last because it wasn't a contributory plan. And so he said, I stuck with the Social Security model. And old Doc Townsend came into my district and organized these Townsend clubs, and they beat me. I mean, the moral of the story is today people cannot imagine this country without Social Security. And if you told seniors today that you wanted to kill off Social Security, they'd break your arm. So it just shows that these little debates that we have along the way, they don't really count for very much. And I'm confident that just as was the case with Social Security, that this health care bill, as people find out what it does and does not contain, that it will become extremely popular.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Congressman Dave Obey. He's with us for the full hour. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is a special live broadcast of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we will be back right after these short messages.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Our guest on this special live edition of Route 51, Congressman Dave Obey, taking your phone calls. And the phone number again is 1-800-780-9742. We've got full lines if you'd like to try to get in. 1-800-780-9742. Dave, let's talk about the economy. The stock market has dropped more than 1,000 points in a month. Unemployment is still hovering at just under 10%. Of the 450,000 jobs created last month, only 41,000 in the private sector. Republicans are saying that this shows that the economic stimulus bill that you wrote was a failure.
Well, frankly, that's a joke, and it's typical of the political response that we've had from the Republican Party leadership nationally on this issue. For them to criticize what we're trying to do to help the economy recover, it's like the people who drove the country into the ditch now whining because they don't like the color of the tires on the car that's pulling them out of the ditch. The fact is we inherited the worst economic conditions in 70 years. We were losing over 750,000 jobs per month. And we had a choice. We could either do something or sit on our butts and do nothing. And we chose to try to do the same thing that FDR did in the 30s, which is to expand consumer purchasing power in order to put people back to work.
How then do you explain the stock market dropping 1,000 points and unemployment still up at this level?
Let me get there because this is a complicated issue and I want to walk through it. So what we did was to simply take a look at the fact that we were losing all of those jobs, and we tried to put money in the places in the economy that would help us turn the economy around. So one-third of the money that we put into that recovery package was put in the form of tax cuts, largely at the request of Republicans. Then we put in a major amount of money to help keep construction workers on the job, building highways, bridges, things like that. We helped protect the jobs of over 200,000 teachers by pumping money into education. And over time, you can't show this chart over the radio.
Dave is showing me a chart, so I'll try to explain it to you.
And what it shows is that the job loss began in December of 2007. It rose to 753,000 jobs being lost each month. In December, January, February, and March of 2009, 3 months after the stimulus package passed, the job losses began to drop. And now, over the last 4 months, we've had more than 500,000 new jobs created.
And so the chart Mr. Obey was just showing is a jobs chart. It looks basically like a mountaintop.
That's right.
And when the stimulus bill passed, the improvement in at least the number of jobs lost per month continued. But how do you explain the fact that we only gained 41,000 private jobs last month when, you know, and 400,000 jobs were basically U.S. Census workers?
Because you cannot expect one piece of legislation to solve the mess that was created over the past 3 years. Passing the stimulus package doesn't correct the fact that Wall Street went nuts and drove the banking system into the tank. It doesn't correct the fact that the housing market exploded. It doesn't correct the fact that worldwide economies have been struggling. And very frankly, in my view, the package that passed the Congress was too small, not too large.
Economist Robert Reich says we're falling into a double-dip recession. He says the only reason we haven't fallen back is because of your stimulus. He gives you credit for that. And near-zero interest rates, consumers and industry having to replace worn-out items, and also these temporary census workers. He's calling for more stimulus immediately and what he calls a new deal for the long term. Is that even possible given the current climate in Washington?
Well, here's the problem. I think we are in danger of repeating the mistakes that were made in 1937 by Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt was a great president, but what happened with him is when he took office, the country was at rock bottom. And so Roosevelt tried to prime the economic pump to get the jobs going again. And he did that. And by 1937, unemployment had dropped from about 25% to 15%. At that point, he thought the battle was over. So he stopped government investments in those programs, and the country tipped into another recession, and it took two more years to pull out of it. People will say, oh, you can't spend money at a time like this because it's going to create a deficit. The fact is, if we don't make these investments now to expand consumer purchasing power, we will never get to a balanced budget, because if somebody is unemployed, they don't pay taxes, they do collect unemployment, they do collect Medicaid and other public services, and that adds to the deficit. So if you want to eliminate the deficit, you have to first get people working again, and we could use some bipartisan help on that score.
The deficit hawks are pointing to riots in Greece, the collapse of the euro, troubles in Spain and Hungary, all tied to debt.
Very different picture than in the United States. Very different picture. I mean, the Greeks, their debt as a percentage of their total national income is wildly out of control. With ours, there is no question that long term we have to reduce the debt. And we did that under Bill Clinton. We were running huge deficits under George Bush. Bill Clinton came into office and turned the budget around, and he ran three straight years of budget surpluses. Then George Bush Jr. came in, reversed Clinton's policies, and the deficits exploded again. He put money into two wars without paying for it.
Dave,
money into two tax cuts without
David,
paying for it.
David, it's hard to interrupt you, but I have to do that. We have to take a news break. 1-800-780-9742. If you want to talk to Dave Obey, Steve in Monaco, and Art in Stevens Point, hang on, you're next.
WPR's audience services team is ready to help when you need more information about the programs you hear. Call toll-free 800-747-7444 when you have a question or comment. 800-747-7444.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. This is a special live broadcast. We have Congressman Dave Obey looking back at his 41-year career, looking around at the top stories that are making the news today, and not much of it is very good, and also taking your phone calls, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Dave Obey, the lines are full right now, but we are about to start freeing them up. And we'll do that with Steve in Monaco. Steve, you're on Route 51.
Hello. Thank you for your service, Congressman. I wanted to ask you, I know that all the way since President Nixon in 1969, you've had an opportunity to work with presidents who all, you know, did accomplish different things, and they all had some positive attributes. And I'm interested in their methods, how they worked differently, and specifically some of the ones that you may have oftentimes disagreed with. Like, for instance, George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. I'm wondering how they dealt with you and, like, what they were like personally, what kind of personalities they had when they dealt with you.
Well, I was, too new in the Congress to have much of a personal relationship with Richard Nixon. I was too junior, so I didn't know him very well. But of all the presidents that I served with, I would say that Obama will probably be the most historic simply because of the huge problems that he has had to confront. He's really just into the first year and a half of his term, and the jury is still out on him historically. But of the other presidents that I worked with, in the book that I wrote two or three years ago, I concluded that of those men, Jerry Ford was probably the best that I'd served with, because after impeachment of Richard Nixon, the country was in the dumpster emotionally. They didn't trust government. They didn't trust anybody in it. And Ford was such an incredibly decent human being that it showed, and I think he helped restore the confidence of the country. When he came to the House floor shortly before he died, I grabbed him and I said, Jerry, I'm going to surprise you, but in the book I've just written, I listed you as being the best president I ever worked with. And he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Slim pickings, wasn't it, Dave?" But I actually enjoyed working with Ronald Reagan's people, because while I differed with them, they knew how to work with the Congress, and some of them were very bright. Jerry Ford had good people. Clinton had some excellent people. So they all had their different working style, but I think in the end, Obama will probably wind up being the president who has to handle more big issues than anybody else I served with.
Steve, thanks for the phone call. We're going to let you go. I want to get to as many calls as possible. Let's go to Art in Stevens Point. Art, you're on Route 51 with Congressman Dave Obie.
Thank you. Congressman Obie, I'm an administrator from Stevens Point School District, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate what you've done for our school district. And I happen to know that many other administrators in central Wisconsin feel the same way. And this Saturday, I have a cabin up in the Park Falls area, and I was talking to a realtor up there, and they were concerned what they're going to do without you in that position because of all they appreciate what you've done for the jobs and the paper mill and their educational programs, too. You've always believed in investing in education. I just want to personally thank you.
Well, I thank you, and I thank you for working in education. It's crucial. To me, education is the great door opener in society. If you want to see a healthy economy, you have to see to it that we have a well-educated workforce, and you have to see to it that each and every individual can reach their full potential as human beings, and you do that largely through education.
As the stimulus plan is winding down, could we see more firings now of teachers and maybe even policemen and firemen as the money is no longer there going to the states?
Absolutely, and that's what we're trying to prevent. We passed in the House in December legislation which would prevent laying off about 200,000 educators, mostly teachers. And we're trying again with a separate bill now. We saved over 200,000 teaching jobs last year, but if we don't act, that money will run out. And because the economy is not recovering as quickly as we need and as dramatically as we need to do something besides just stand there and say, "Oh, isn't that a shame?" Or else we will see a substantial weakening of our education system over the next 2 years.
Art, thanks so much for the phone call. And let's go now to Brian in Whiting. Brian, you're on Route 51 with Congressman Dave Obie.
Hello, Congressman. Something that disappointed me about health care reform was that it didn't address reform of the private Medigap plans that supplement Medicare. Those plans can still reject people based on their pre-existing conditions. And I'm wondering if something might be done about that still while you're in office. I've contacted your office a couple times about that this past year, but nothing's come of it so far. And I wasn't able to, I can't find out when you're going to be in my area because it's not posted on your website. Let's let
Congressman Obie answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let me simply say that there are a lot of things that I would like to have seen in the health care plan that weren't in it. I would like to have seen a public option, for instance, but we didn't have the votes for them. In a legislative body, you have 435 people, and you can pass whatever you can get 218 votes for and a presidential signature in the House. And unfortunately, in the Senate, you need 60 votes out of 100 in order to get permission to go to the bathroom. And so that bill fell short in many respects, but it still will provide, for the first time, protection for individuals. Insurance companies will not be able to simply drop you from a plan or jack up your rates three times because you have a pre-existing condition. And there will be more than 30 million people who did not have access to health care until now who will have it. And we will have lots of help for small businesses who want to provide health care for their people. And so you do the best you can and you move on. And when you get another shot at improving something, you do it. That's what happened with Social Security. It's what happened with Medicare. And I'm sure it's what will happen with this bill.
Brian, thanks so much for the phone call. Dave, the big story, besides the economy, is the BP oil spill. The word now is that it will continue through the summer. Worst case scenario until Christmas. We have essentially, it seems, at least to observers looking at the images coming across the television screens, we've destroyed the Gulf of Mexico, a priceless part of our national heritage and God's green earth. How could this have happened? How can we fix it? And how can we make sure it never happens again?
It's happened because of this mindset that somehow government regulation must be avoided at all costs. We have had a 30-year drive in this country, beginning in the last 2 years of Jimmy Carter's administration and going like gangbusters through Reagan and Bush. We've had this intense drive to deregulate versus everything in the economy and just trust the big boys to take care of everything. And so the result is disaster. In the energy field, for instance, whether you're talking about nuclear power or whether you're talking about offshore oil, this country has acted like it's a permanent president of an optimist club. And now we're recognizing these companies don't have a clue about how to clean things up. They're flying by the seat of their pants. I was in Norway last week talking to the leaders of the petroleum regulatory people in Norway, trying to determine how they regulate deep sea oil, because they had two blowouts 30 years ago. And I have to tell you, the person running their safety program for the oil industry is one tough bird, and he takes no nonsense from anybody. And we have to recognize that these are precious resources that we're trying to protect. We're also paying for the fact that since Jimmy Carter left office, this country has systematically disinvested in other kinds of energy research. And so we wind up being prisoners of what the oil industry wants to do and what the nuclear industry wants to do. If we had not gutted funding for alternative energy and energy conservation program over the last 30 years, we wouldn't be nearly as reliant on Gulf oil as we are, and we certainly wouldn't be nearly as reliant on Middle East oil as we are.
The first thing Ronald Reagan did when he took over from Jimmy Carter was take the solar panels off the top of the White House. But we are hearing the cry from a number of people, a number of Republican voices, including Sarah Palin, and now both of the Republicans running for the Senate in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson and Dave Westlake, saying this spill means that we should now open up drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge because it would be safer than deep offshore drilling. Your reaction?
Wacky, wacky, wacky. That's my reaction. My God, I mean, Sarah Palin, you mean, is this a Sarah Palin who kept crying during the campaign, drill, baby, drill, drill, baby, drill? The fact is that the oil industry has demonstrated that in terms of dealing with deep water, it doesn't know what it's doing. What we need to be doing, instead of tossing open more areas to the oil companies, we need to intensify our research in alternative energy. We need to intensify our research in energy conservation. And I mean, with all due respect, it's the advice of people like Sarah Palin that got us in trouble in the first place. The Bush administration was owned lock, stock, and barrel by the oil industry. You had government official after official who had been on oil company boards. There was even an oil tanker named after Condoleezza Rice, for instance. I mean, if you take a look at who Bush appointed to regulate these industries, you had the fox guarding the chicken coop.
What kind of logic is it when you can take the worst environmental disaster in history, one caused by oil drilling, and then argue that it means we should do more oil drilling?
Well, they must be smoking something that ain't legal, because I don't think rational people would say the answer is more drilling. The answer is to insist that people have the technical know-how and can demonstrate it ahead of time before you allow them to drill in the first place.
Any chance of getting a green energy bill through Congress or through the Senate, given the current climate in Washington? Would this disaster provide the impetus for something like that?
We've already passed major energy reform in the House. That bill needs a lot of work, but it is a huge step forward. The Senate is all snarled because of their 60-vote requirement. I don't know whether this will bring people to their senses or not, but there is no short-term fix for this problem. We are right now dependent on all of these sources of energy, and we've got to wean ourselves off that. And the only way we do it is by investing much larger amounts in both the private sector and the public sector, so that we learn how to produce different kinds of energy, and so we learn how to use much less of it.
There's a new poll out today from ABC News and the Washington Post showing that 69% of the American public give the federal government response a negative rating to this oil spill, compared to 62% for the government's response to Hurricane Katrina. Has this become Barack Obama and the Democrats' Hurricane Katrina, and can they survive it?
Well, with all due respect, the government doesn't have the facilities to correct these problems. When you grant licenses to people to drill, those licenses should not be granted until you know that they have the technology to fix a problem if one develops. This is a problem that was caused by absolute lack of supervision of the oil industry. And if it happens on your watch, you're going to get blamed for it, even if you didn't have a blessed thing to do with it. I would suggest that the drilling that's going on in the Gulf has been driven for years by politicians from oil states who are some of the same politicians now squawking about the results.
Congressman Dave Obey, this is a special live edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we have him for about another 10 minutes. So if you would like to make a phone call and talk to the congressman, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are open. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back with more right after this.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is a special live edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are talking to Congressman Dave Obey and taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Judy in Phillips. Judy, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Hi,
hello.
Mr. Obey.
Hi.
I'm just calling to tell you how much I have really appreciated your service and all you've done for Wisconsin and for America. I want to thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I have to say, over the years, probably 20, 25 years, I've written you every once in a while about something, and you have never failed to answer me. A couple times you've disagreed with what I said, and I appreciate your honesty when you answered me, but I really liked it that you always responded to my letters.
Well, thank you. We receive an awful lot of mail, and we try to answer it all. As far as disagreeing once in a while, Will Rogers said once that when two people agree on everything, one of them is unnecessary. That's the great thing about American democracy. People have a right to disagree with each other without attacking each other personally or without impugning somebody's motives.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Judy,
thank you.
Thanks so much for the phone call. We do have one call from, actually not a call, but it's an email question that came into us. Jim from Wausau wants to know that now that you are no longer running for re-election and you no longer have to please, these are his words, the Israeli lobby, will you use your position to block further military aid to Israel following the attacks on ships of two NATO allies on the high seas?
I don't think it's constructive to talk about cutting off military aid to countries if we don't like a specific action that we've taken. I have on more than one occasion been very firm in my criticism of individual policies of some of the administrations in Israel. But what we need right now on the part of the United States is a firm hand to insist that both the Israelis and the Palestinians finally get down to business and try to resolve some of their differences. I mean, two of the things that I wanted to see when I first was elected. I wanted to see peace in the Middle East. I wanted to see peace in Northern Ireland. We managed to get it of sorts in Northern Ireland. I never thought I would see somebody like Ian Paisley on the Protestant side sitting down with some of the IRA people. But that has happened. And the problem in the Middle East today is that virtually every Israeli politician who was inclined to really take risks for peace has now either died or been killed. And on the Palestinian side, there's virtually nobody left who can deliver on anything. And so we're stuck in a god-awful mess. And we need to keep the pressure on both sides to reduce their field of differences, because the Middle East is always in a race between reasonableness and chaos, and usually chaos wins.
President Bush, in a speech that wasn't videotaped, but there were a number of eyewitnesses, he said unequivocally this past week that he waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and he would do it again. Now, Mohammed was waterboarded over 100 times. Did Mr. Bush, as his critics claim, admit that he committed torture and a war crime? And if so, what can we do about it?
I don't really know what Bush said. I was out of the country for the last week, and so I'm not going to comment on something I haven't read carefully. All I can say is that I do not believe in torture. I think that experts in interrogation have concluded a long time ago that you get more information through other means than you do by routine torture.
Are you disappointed that Guantanamo is still open?
Yes, because I think it is it gives our enemies, especially in the Middle East, an easy target to attack us, when in fact they should be the issue, not us. We didn't attack them; they attacked us, and so I don't believe in giving your enemy any more elbow room than is absolutely necessary.
We've got time for two more phone calls. Let's go to Fred in Michigan. Fred, you are on Route 51 with Congressman Dave Obey. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Dave. I just wanted to thank you for some things that I read that you're going to be trying to do recently for the city of Wisconsin Rapids. And so I wanted to thank you. Also, I know Wisconsin's going to miss your tremendous political power. And I just wonder how Wisconsin, you think, will fare with, say, we get a freshman representative like Julie Lassa in. And also, what is your feelings towards Julie? That's my comments. Good luck to you in your retirement.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Well, I mean, I have a great deal of regard for Julie. She is very tough. She has more experience now than I did when I was elected to Congress. Frankly, I don't know of a single other politician who ever succeeded in suing another politician for libel. But she did, after she was smeared in a campaign a number of years ago. She was tough enough to fight back and won the argument. So I think she would be a terrific representative.
Critics are saying that you greased the wheels for her. The Democratic Party greased the wheels for her and made sure there wasn't any significant opposition.
That's nonsense. I mean, the potential candidates sat down in a room and worked things out themselves. I was not even there. I didn't know who they would select. There were at least four others who I thought would be legitimate candidates. And the fact is that what those potential candidates did was to sort out their differences like adults. When I ran the first time, we had four people who wanted to run: Larry Dahl, Frank Nicolay, Burt Grover, and myself. And I told Frank that he was senior to me in the legislature, and I'd step aside. He said, "No, Dave, you'll be the strongest candidate." We approached it in terms of what's good for the party and the area, not what's good for me. And everybody worked together, and that's the only reason I won. And that's the same thing that happened with Julie.
Let's go to John in Mosinee, our final caller. And, John, I'm afraid we're running out of time. You've only got about 30 seconds here.
Okay. First off, Dave, I'd like to thank you for all your years of service. And I'd also like to ask you, in the beginning, you were, when Nixon started his war on drugs, you endorsed that. Do you think that's been going well for us, or do we need to change direction on that?
I endorsed what?
The war on drugs that Nixon
Well, I detest the use of illegal drugs because it's ruined many a family. But I have never been one that was very enthusiastic about the likelihood of success of our anti-drug program in Latin America, because we only stopped, even under Reagan, when that program reached its zenith, we only stopped about 2% of all the drugs entering this country. So I don't think it's been very effective.
John, thanks so much for the phone call, and we are out of time. We want to thank 7th District Congressman Dave Obie. Mr. Obie, thank you for being with us today, and please don't be a stranger during your retirement. If you want to stop by and play harmonica, we're more than willing to save a microphone for you. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. This coming Thursday, Route 51 returns to its normal time slot at 5 o'clock with UW Marathon County political scientist Eric Giordano. We will be analyzing some of what was said today. Ben Marins and At Issue is next. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until this coming Thursday, we're heading out of town.